At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center, and we're going to talk about critical race theory. According to scholars, critical race theory, otherwise known as CRT, is an approach to the issues of racism that look at systems, institutions, and biases embedded in social structures. In essence, it focuses on race as the key to understanding society. But in my opinion, as I understand the issue and as I'm learning about it, it fails to consider the human heart. So joining us today is former Lieutenant Governor Jeanine Hampton to discuss this issue. Jeanine, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hey, it's always good to have you here. And we were talking off the set whether or not you were at our new office. And I thought you had been here, but you got a chance to drive up to Frankfort from Bowling Green today and see our office.
Through a lot of rain.
A lot of heavy rain,
but yeah. It was worth it.
Glad that you made it here safely and in one piece, especially as we talk about this issue of race. And you and I have spent time in the past talking about race. Mm-hmm. It's been an issue in the news for several years, and it seems to be reaching a boiling point, if you will. CPC has addressed issues from a biblical worldview, whether it's the sanctity of life or religious freedom or smaller government, the purpose of government. And the same is true when it comes to the issue of race and race reconciliation. We look at this as a something where however we deal with whatever issue, it really boils down to the human heart and how we process through those challenges. Mm-hmm. But Jeanine, you have an interesting background in family history, I think, that offers perspective that many of us don't have when we think of race and race relations. You grew up in inner city Detroit, single mom raised you and your three sisters.
Yes.
And you have a unique perspective. I guess I'll start with this. Have you experienced racism growing up in the inner city? That's something that you were aware of? I was
aware of racism, of course. So being born in 1958, the first 10 years of my life, I was aware of the civil rights movement. I didn't see any of that in Detroit, per se, but I knew who Dr. King was. I'd seen the videos of the marchers. They had dogs, fire hoses turned on them. Mm-hmm. And I was aware of the extent of racism in our nation, including the Jim Crow laws. You know, we tend to throw that. I've seen that term being thrown about, I think, carelessly, but Jim Crow laws, the separate but equal, saw all of that just from a distance. And what it told me was that I was blessed to live in this nation, number one. I so value freedom, freedom and liberty, and I knew that I was blessed to live in a nation where that was being addressed. And I knew about the slave trade. They, interestingly enough, they had taught that in the Detroit public school systems in the 1960s. So first 10 years of my life, I learned not only about slavery, but I learned about these amazing black people that they typically didn't talk about in history classes, like Phyllis Wheatley, Benjamin Banneker, George Washington Carver, who was an engineer.
Yeah.
Amazing people. But the way they taught it, they didn't teach it from the perspective that black people are victims. They just taught, look, you have an amazing history, too. And so I was grateful for that.
Yeah. So you were aware of some of our troubled past, the slave trade.
Absolutely.
Jim Crow, separate but equal.
Absolutely.
But what I heard from you, or I didn't hear, is you did not experience racism yourself when you were growing up in Detroit.
The racism that I did growing up in Detroit, no. If anything, the racism that I experienced was not from white people. It was actually from other black people.
Tell us about that.
Black kids. I call it peer pressure to fail. And it was kids who either mocked me or bullied me for getting good grades, for reading a lot, for the way I spoke. They'd even home in on some physical features. You know, you know, you're too dark, or you look at your nose, or that those sorts of things. So the racism that I saw was not from white people telling me that I was inferior. It was from other black people questioning why I was doing the things I was doing. And that never made any sense to me, because I knew that in America, we are all individuals, and we as citizens, we have rights. And I have the right to have my own likes and dislikes without anybody else questioning, as long as I'm not, you know, harming people or burning things down. You know?
I know your story, and I've heard you speak about this in the past, but you, and I know your personality. You are bookish. You're a lifelong learner. You like to study.
Absolutely.
And I recall that when you were into the books and not doing things that your peers were doing, some would accuse you of trying to be white.
Trying to be white. That's exactly right. And, you know, the sad part is, you know, when I was in office, I visited over 200 schools. And so a wide range of schools. That charge still abounds, and it's crazy. And you see it not just applied to students. You see it in the folks who would dismiss a Clarence Thomas, Justice Clarence Thomas. You know, he's not a real black person. Condoleezza Rice, she's not a real black person. And there's all this focus on skin color, and it saddens me. It really does sadden me because, I mentioned Dr. Martin Luther King, huge influence on me when I was a kid. And, you know, I think every student has heard what he said about his kids. He wanted his kids to be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And being that bookish kid that I was, I kind of mulled that over. I knew why he said it. I was aware, like I said, of the civil rights movement. But to me, this is how I digested that. I can expect to not be judged by my skin color, but it meant I couldn't judge others based on theirs, period. Period.
Yeah, it's a two-way street.
It's a two-way street, absolutely.
So just talking about this topic of critical race theory is so hot that people are afraid of saying the wrong thing, or if you bring it up, they might, let me take a step back. If you talk about racial reconciliation, they think it's often equated with critical race theory. Mm-hmm. We just did a conference called Christianity and Culture, and one of the topics was on racial reconciliation. And here was a email that was sent to us. Is the racial reconciliation session going to be about critical race theory? I know they won't call it that, but from what I've already heard from some pastors, it is the same propaganda. I know that it's been creeping into the church. I don't want to be there if this is the case. Now, we address this issue from a biblical worldview. I think people who know CPC know that we're conservative, we'll address issues from a biblical worldview, and yet this person had in mind, just by touching on the topic of racial reconciliation, it meant that we might talk about critical race theory, which makes it a challenge. I think there are a couple of ways, Janine, that we can approach this from a Christian perspective. When I talk about racial reconciliation, or we can approach it as a perspective as an American, which is what I was hearing you talk about, that you looked at the blessings of liberty. You looked at some great black people who achieved, did some great things.
Well, you know, I actually think those are intertwined, actually, because our nation, we're coming up on Independence Day.
Yeah.
Our nation was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. So they're intertwined. So when I talk about the freedom and liberty and independence, you know, we have our founding fathers to thank for doing something really extraordinary, because freedom, if you look at all of history, freedom is such a rarity. It's rare. In the annals of history.
It's extremely rare. And one of the things our founding fathers did, and one thing we're going to celebrate this July 4th, is the Declaration of Independence.
That's right.
Which, that key phrase, and I think the greatest American ideal, is that we acknowledge the Creator who endows us with inalienable rights.
Absolutely.
That's part of our political framework, that it's not government that gives us our rights, it's not some other institution that gives us the rights, but it is the Creator God who endows us with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And this comes from the Christian idea that we are made in the image of God. And part of that image is that he gives us conscience. He gives us a creative capacity. He gives us the capacity to work and to build wealth and that kind of thing. And that's something the founding fathers did recognize. But here we are today, and race is still an issue. Now, we cannot whitewash some of the racial injustice, serious racial injustice that has happened.
J.D.
Greer, former Southern Baptist Convention president, gave a sermon on racial reconciliation, and he talked about CRT. And he said this: some in our ranks inappropriately use the label of CRT to avoid legitimate questions or as a cudgel to dismiss any discussion of discrimination. Many cannot even define what CRT is. If we in the Southern Baptist Convention had shown as much sorrow for the painful legacy that sin has left as we show passion to decry CRT, we probably wouldn't be in this mess. And some people, now that statement was controversial. Now, J.D. Greer's a conservative pastor,
mm-hmm.
but where he was erring was on the side of empathy and compassion
mm-hmm.
in that message. And I try to balance how we deal with tough issues in approaching, looking at people on the other side and how they're processing through them. I try mm-hmm. to balance that with the reality. How should we think through this biblically? How do we approach it? But one thing that you and I have talked about in relation to this that plays into it is that there are many people who have peddled grievances, grievance peddlers. They pick at old wounds.
Mm-hmm.
They instill this idea that you're continuing to be kept down. If you're in the black population, there's this in that. As I see it. Well, why don't you respond to that? Because we had this conversation before.
You know, I admit when I was a kid, I did not appreciate the role of God's hand in my life. He was there, even mm-hmm. though I kept him at arm's length. And so today, my lens is really, it's a biblical one.
Mm-hmm.
And the statement talks about the sin, past sins, acknowledging mm-hmm. the past sins. And I think America has done that, but it almost sounds like that pastor is talking about, I'm not sure what he wants us to do, because mm-hmm. Jesus Christ took on our sins,
mm-hmm.
and Jesus Christ would not want us to demonize whole groups of people,
mm-hmm.
especially mm-hmm. demonizing whole groups of people for their great-great-great-great-grandfather's sins. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
And that's part of it, Janine, that we're seeing in the CRT discussion, where you see demonization of a whole race. Here's mm-hmm. what Robin DiAngelo says in her book, White Fragility. Those who object to CRT do so because even the mere suggestion that being white has meaning often triggers a range of defensive responses, anger, fear, and guilt, and behaviors such as argumentation, silence, and withdrawal from the stress-inducing situation. These responses work to reinstate white equilibrium as they repel the challenge, return our racial comfort, and maintain our dominance within the racial hierarchy.
Way too much focus on skin color in that statement.
Speak
way
to
too
that.
Way too much focus. It, for me, it's really simple. Things are simple. This argument. Mm-hmm. This is not my life. Is not a theory. This is mm-hmm. not a. This is not a theoretical discussion for me.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ would have me treat people as people. And mm-hmm. I know there were some bad things that happened a long time ago between the races, but today if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, you mm-hmm. are called to treat everyone as your brother and sister, everyone, regardless of skin color. And I took Dr. King's words to heart as a kid, and that has led to a tremendously rewarding life.
Yeah, we're gonna take a quick break. I want to pick up on that thought, though.
Okay.
How, and the question is how should the black community, in your opinion, if you'd have them to think through past injustices and where we are mm-hmm. in American history today, how would you have them think through it? But we're going to take a quick break. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Janine Hampton. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky. Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with former Lieutenant Governor Janine Hampton, and we are talking critical race theory. And Janine, just before the break, we were talking about grievance peddling. You and I grew up in an era where we saw, and I'll just name names, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, where they found grievances and they peddled grievances. And sometimes there were shakedowns of organizations to support their groups to fund their cause. But it was more, I think there's a fine line between identifying an injustice, and we still have injustice. There's still racism, but picking at wounds and peddling grievances and making an entire population feel like they have been marginalized or that somebody's keeping them down, that's not where we are. I think we've made a lot of advances since Jim Crow laws, since Martin Luther King
Jr. Oh, we've made huge advances.
But how would you have, how should, in your opinion, the Black community think through, how can they reconcile the past histories, the injustices, with where we are today? Or how do they think through that?
Well, we definitely ought to know our history. We absolutely ought to know our history. But here's what I know. Today, even in the 1960s, certainly the 70s and 80s, I had a freedom, have a freedom that my slave ancestors prayed to have. And I know that if they were suddenly, you know, brought in, up into this day and age, they'd be entrepreneurs, they'd be professional people. They would not listen to people who tell them they are still oppressed. They would not listen to people who tell them they are victims. The only thing we can control, I tell kids this all the time, the only thing you can control is yourself in any situation. And so if somebody is continually telling you something negative about yourself, you have two choices. You can either believe them or don't believe them. So when those kids I told you about, I just simply didn't believe them. You asked me about if I experienced racism growing up. Not growing up. I did my first job, but I took care of that.
You want to tell us?
I'm not going to tell you because I don't want to malign the company.
Okay.
And I don't want them to think that I'm coming for money or anything like that. I will just say that there was a man there who, when I hired in, I don't know what his deal was, but he would make overtly racist jokes and, you know, the supervisor never did anything. And I just shut him down because I had a right to be there. I think he was threatened because I'd learned more in 6 months than he'd learned in 10 years on the job. And my viewpoint was that I was there to do a job. I didn't work for him. Mm-hmm. And he stopped. Simply stopped.
Yeah. So there's other ways to deal with racism than through legislation, right?
Legislation. And you know, you mentioned something earlier though, in that quote from White Fragility. Mm-hmm. I have noticed over the years how just the threat of being labeled racist shuts down conversation. I remember advising my Tea Party group, and I told the group they would have to find a way to address that charge, because of course it's not true. You know, it's the charge is being leveled by people who don't even know you. They don't know you. They don't know your history. They're judging you solely by your skin color. And I have to come back to any time any group of people is demonized for any reason, whether it's Black people, white people, police, Jews, you name it, it never ends well.
And from
it never ends well.
From the biblical worldview that we were talking about earlier, it's because we're made in the image of God, regardless of our race or ethnicity, because there's equal value between men and women, between the different races. We all have equal value.
And certainly, you know, in this country, we don't always get that right. But if you're walking, if you're truly trying to walk with Jesus Christ, you know, if you get that little voice that says, that's not right. Something you just said or something you just did is not right. And so...
So part of critical race theory is that it teaches that there is the majority population, which is the white population, is involved with oppression, that the institutions have had racism, and that has changed over the years. We don't have institutional racism. The U.S. Supreme Court has made terrible rulings in the past, Dred Scott, Plessy v. Ferguson, but those have been rectified.
That's right.
And that's maybe the testimony or the testament to our democratic ideals. We have free speech and there's freedom of press where those wrongs could be exposed. We could discuss and debate. Laws could be crafted. We go through the legislative process and we right those wrongs.
it's a testament to the system of government that the founders wisely put into place, because they actually built in a mechanism so that we can make improvements to our system and right the wrongs. One of the things that I hear a lot is the three-fifths of a man clause.
Yeah.
I've heard several black people just totally dismiss the entire Constitution because that's in there. Now, a lot of people don't recognize or realize why that clause is in there. And it's because the South suddenly wanted to count black people as a person, where before they weren't even, they were treated as property. Mm-hmm. And had that been the case, I don't know how long the South would have, the Confederacy would have been in charge of this nation, and it would not have worked out well. And so the compromise, to get it ratified, to get this document ratified, the compromise was, okay, we will count them as three-fifths of a person. Now, that was all wiped out when slavery was abolished.
And of course, the reason why the South wanted blacks to be included as three-fifths so they could have more representation in Congress.
That's exactly right.
So how
That's
about
exactly
that?
Exactly right.
It was convenient. And of course, that was done away with after the Emancipation and mm-hmm. after the Civil War mm-hmm. Brought an end to that question. So I want to talk about CRT in the public schools. There are two bills proposed in the Kentucky legislature mm-hmm. that would ban the teaching of CRT. And one of these is BR-69. Matt Lockett and Jennifer Decker co-sponsored this. And what this would do, Janine, is it would ban the teaching that one race, sex, or religion is inherently superior to another race, sex, or religion. Mm-hmm. It would teach that an individual, by virtue of his or her race, sex, or religion, is inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive, whether consciously or unconsciously. An individual should be discriminated against or receive adverse treatment solely or partly because of his or her race, sex, or religion. There are eight different provisions that this anti-CRT bill would put into place if it passes. But essentially what I'm reading here in the language of the proposed bill is that it's banning racism. It's banning judgments based on skin color. It's even going further. It's banning sexism or religious discrimination. This bill has gotten a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people speaking out against it. This is what the University of Louisville Pan-African Studies Department Chair Ricky Jones said about this bill, this anti-CRT bill. This is, I quote, "This is not only educational censorship, but a reaffirmation of white supremacy by barring teachers from discussing it in a substantive way." And that's another comment from Kentucky Education Commissioner Jason Glass. He had a statement after, and this was Joe Fisher's, State Representative Joe Fisher's anti-CRT bill. Jason Glass said, "I oppose efforts to limit free speech and the exchange of ideas in our classrooms. I also oppose state-level and politically driven efforts to micromanage our local classroom teachers." Care to respond to either one of those?
I think what that bill is trying to do, if you distill it down, is stop teaching or prevent teaching that any group of, back up, stop teaching that white students are bad just by virtue of their skin color, mm-hmm. black people are fill in the blank just by virtue of their skin color, oppressed, whatever, victims, whatever words you want to use. And that's the danger. You know, what we tell our kids, especially young ones, it will shape their life. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. not that they can't overcome it, but it certainly will shape their lives. And we don't, the last thing we need right now in the schools is to be teaching that kids are one side or the other just because of an attribute they cannot control. It's and this whole discussion, unfortunately, is taking us away from the real issues. Mm-hmm. You know, if we want to talk about why black students typically are not reading at the level they should be reading, let's address that. Let's find the root of that problem. Mm-hmm. One thing I'll remember from engineering school is if you define the problem incorrectly, you're going to solve the wrong problem. Mm-hmm. And that, it seems like that's what we're doing. There's way too much. Race is not our issue right now. It's not.
And you have shown that race has not been, it's not, you've actually done well in life. You, college education, you've served in the Air Force, rose to the rank of a captain, lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. That has not been an issue. What so what is the root of the problem? And you were at a disadvantage growing up
in
inner city Detroit.
My inner city Detroit, my parents divorced when I was 7, and my mom only got through 8th grade, so limited. There was not a lot of income coming in, I will say that. And I missed my mom. She passed last year. But again, even in those circumstances, I still knew I had options. I knew I was blessed. I knew I was not stuck. Today I will say to every Black family has the same right and opportunity as other families to make sure that their kids are going to school and learning what they're supposed to do and they're where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there. My mom did that for me, providing structure. And yes, she took us to church, and it took a few decades for that to sink in for me. But every family, every American citizen has the same right to take care of their families, which in slave times we didn't have that. We have all this opportunity to pursue opportunity, to determine what our gifts, our God-given gifts are, and to earn a living so we can take care of ourselves and our family. And it's one of the reasons I love this nation.
That's a good note to close on. I wish I could press on that a little bit more. Maybe we'll have to do another program.
We can do
but
that.
We are out of time. Janine Hampton, so good to have you with us.
Good to see you again.
You too. God bless.
Hi, Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center here. It's clear to all of us that we're living in confusing and challenging times where law and culture are increasingly hostile to Christian values. So how do you maintain your faith and convictions in such a climate? That's a question that we're helping to answer at our Christianity and Culture conferences. The goal is to help believers to understand the culture and how to respond in an effective and winsome way. And we'd love for you to join us. The first two conferences were well received, and we look forward to seeing you at our fall conferences in Bowling Green, Paducah, and in Somerset. To find out more about them, go to CommonwealthPolicyCenter.org. That's CommonwealthPolicyCenter.org. And we look forward to seeing you in the fall.